buying behavior has changed. Prospects don't click on links in emails anymore, and they don't watch the videos you spend hours creating every week. Instead, send personalized gifts and memes using VidYou. You can quickly create engaging, personalized content that immediately grabs your prospect's attention, helps you stand out in the inbox, and does it all without forcing them to click anything or go anywhere. Head over to vidyou.io/salescast to sign up for free and spend less time getting your messages across and more time selling.
Welcome to The Sales Hustle, the only no BS podcast where we bring you the real, raw, uncut experiences from sales change makers across various industries. The only place where you can get what you're looking for to up your sales game. Today's episode is brought to you by Salescast. Salescast helps sales professionals transform the relationship building process and win their dream clients. I'm your host, Colin Mitchell.
What is happening, sales hustlers? Welcome to another episode. Today, I've got Shaheem Alam, and we're going to be talking about one of my favorite topics, top of funnel, outbound prospecting. We're going to talk about some common mistakes and dig into, you know, what's working with LinkedIn, email, phone. And this is what they do over there with their outsourced top of funnel services that they provide. So Shaheem, thanks so much for coming on today. Before we get into the tactical stuff, just give us the short version of your sales story.
Yeah, for sure. No, thanks, Colin, for having me. Happy to be here. My sales story actually started, I was in university, and then for a few specific reasons, I had to drop out of university and I was looking for a job, found this door-to-door gig that was commission only, selling furnaces and air conditioners door-to-door in Toronto.
Sounds like my kind of gig.
Yeah, man. I started it and in the first 3 weeks, zero sales. I'm working like 6 days a week out there, 10 hours door-to-door, just knocking and just getting nothing. But then, you know, I had a really, really good sales manager. I did like a lot of my own due diligence and learning as well. Finally picked it up, got my first sale. And then, yeah, I did that for like 2 or 3 years, built a big team. Eventually went to appointments and things like that. Then eventually after like 3 years, moved into tech sales, you know, became an SDR for a fintech company, then became an AE for another company. And really found myself in these SaaS and tech sales kind of companies. And then eventually co-founded FiveRings Marketing, where we help other tech companies with the top of funnel lead generation.
Yeah, yeah. All right. So, I mean, they say you got to build a thick skin in sales, right? Like you heard, door-to-door sales will do that for you.
100%. Like, you know, and I always like say this, like, what, you know, when I have kids, I'm going to put them in a door to door. Like, you want to become tough. You want to like learn how people work.
Yeah.
And how to get around. Like, yeah, door to door, man.
Go sell some crap door to door. Yeah, I know, man. I got three kids and my wife's already got them started early. You know, when the neighbors are selling lemonade, they're running up there negotiating, you know, if they're selling it for a, you know, if they're selling it for $1.50, they're asking for three cups for two. Yeah. All right. So, wow, man, door to door for 3 years, you probably developed a lot of skills. I mean, what are some things you learned early on that just really, you know, still stick with you today?
Yeah, absolutely. I think like number one is when it comes to like sales, like it's a numbers game. Like door to door is a numbers game. That's not one thing that I've definitely learned in terms when it comes to sales. If I knock 200 doors, I know I'm coming out with something. So at the end of it, it kind of like comes down to whoever like just grinds the hardest. Like that's the rawest prospecting grind that you can kind of do, right? Door to door. So like just that raw hard work, I would say is one big thing. Number two, I would say that is that sales is learnable. Like I said, like the first 3 weeks, like I don't come from a sales background. I was never like when I was in like high, like early high school, middle school, I was a very shy kid as well, you know, and I just feel like it is learnable. You can learn it. And for me, it was Brian Tracy's Psychology of Selling that did a lot, you know, that helped me quite a bit back in the day. That'd be number two for sure. And I think number three, what I learned from all of that is just out of all the things, I mean, in terms of a skill, I would say like just understanding who you're talking to and like understanding the person you're talking to, and then just like mirroring, matching, you know, those kind of things are super, super important.
Yeah. I mean, definitely numbers. I get that, right? You know, knock on a lot of, you know, you got to get enough up bats to be able to swing, right?
Yeah.
But then making the most out of those opportunities when somebody does, you know, answer the door or pick up the phone or reply to your message, right? Yeah. And understanding who you're talking to, right? So being able to adjust and really actively listen, to ask proper questions and drive the conversation in the right way, because you know, little details matter when you're when you're having conversations with people. And I think a lot of times salespeople are looking for that silver bullet, like, hey, give me the script, give me the playbook. If they say this, I'll say that. But like, dealing with people is just way too dynamic. And, you know, you said being able to mirror and be able to, you know, match and be able to like really understand who you're talking to is such a big thing to learn in sales if you want to be successful.
For sure. And actually, you know, and I'm going to scratch that. Like, I think the biggest thing that I picked up from doing DoorDash, I used to work 7 days a week, man. 7 days a week. It was like negative 20 degrees outside. I'm out there knocking doors. And I think like the biggest thing that I've learned is if you want to succeed in sales, it's not a 9-to-5. Like, it's not a 9-to-5. Like, you're grinding. You got to put in 10, 12 hours a day to get the results. And then it's rewarding. The reward is there, but you got to put in that work first. And I think that's probably the biggest lesson from sales.
And I think if you're just getting started in a new role, or if you're just getting started in sales for the first time, like, you got to be able to be willing to put, you know, make some sacrifices and put the grind, you know, time in. That was one of the things that I learned early on. You know, I barely made it through high school. I didn't go to college. Like, there was not a lot of opportunity for me. My first real job was lugging around furniture. So when I got a sales job, I was like, I'm going to make the most of this, because, you know, people around me were making a lot of money. It seemed like an opportunity, and I didn't think I was going to get many others. And so it was, you know, 12, 14 hour days, getting the list ready on the weekend. And, you know, it doesn't have to be like that forever. But in the beginning, in a new role in sales for the first time, like, you got to be willing to put that work in. And something that, you know, somebody told me early on is like, you want to be successful here, just outwork your competition and you'll be fine.
Exactly. No, I 100% agree with that. And I tell my guys this all the time. Like, it's the work that, like, you don't practice in the game, right? You're an NBA player. You don't practice during the game. You practice during practice and you play during the game. It's the same thing. Your 8 hours of work or whatever your hours of work, you don't practice during that time. You got to practice outside of that.
Yeah. I love that you brought that up. And, you know, that's why there's things like sales communities and, you know, doing some, you know, role playing with your peers or your coworkers, you know, asking some friends to review your email copy, you know, like, you know, send them your prospecting videos, get some feedback. Like, you know, you can't just send a bunch of crap out and see what's going to stick.
100%, man. No, man, I was at, like, when I first started in door-to-door, I'd be at a bar with my friends. I'd be like, hold on, man, let me pitch you a furnace, you know? And I'd be like, there's a furnace right here, and I'm, like, going through the whole pitch. Boom, boom, I'm at home. I'm pitching my mom. I'm pitching my, you know, my brothers. Like, it's crazy, but it pays off.
Yeah, sure. I mean, pitch some people that are going to give you some real honest feedback, right? Like, they have no, you know, it's not going to matter to them if they hurt your feelings.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah. All right. So then you got into tech sales and that's where you really started to develop a lot of the things, that you now, you know, do for companies, right?
Mm-hmm. Exactly. Like, I started working at this, it was a startup called Street Context, based out of Toronto. I was just an SDR, like, entry level, man. I went from like this sales manager, like, from door to door, boom, boom, straight to entry level SDR. And it was just cold calling, finding leads, you know, on LinkedIn, getting their phone numbers, calling their office, getting past gatekeepers, sending emails. And back then, they didn't even have an email automation thing. I'm like copy pasting templates from a Google Doc, you know, sending those off, like, getting responses. So just like a lot of manual, manual work. And that's where I was like, okay, so this is the other side of sales, the digital side of sales.
All right, so I love that, because you went from like managing a team to actually going to SDR, and I think, you know, a lot of people trying to break into tech sales don't realize, unfortunately, a lot of tech companies are not going to love it if you don't have a lot of tech experience. I don't personally agree with that. But that's the world that we live in. And sometimes you got to be willing to, you know, take a lower role just to get in and then, you know, show them what you can do. I mean, I was just, you know, I just saw somebody post something on LinkedIn. I mean, they took a, you know, they took a SDR position 3 months, got promoted to an SDR leader. After another 6 months, got promoted to AE. Like, it's possible if you get in there and show them what you can do, but, you know, if you can get over yourself and your ego to maybe take a move like you did, and it clearly paid off.
Yeah, exactly. And it was a crazy ride, man. And like, the reason why I switched to tech sales at all is because, like, I didn't want to be in the door to door game for the rest of my life. Right?
Why not?
It's crazy, man. No, it's a lot of reasons. But basically, you know, like, I didn't want to be 40 and still managing a door to door team and have, like, going out on the field, blah blah blah. So I was like, okay, like, let's switch. That was a career move. But around that time, and I'll tell you a bit of a personal story, is, so I made a lot of money doing door to door sales. I also spent it all. Terrible financial decisions when I was younger, in my early 20s, worst financial decisions. And then I also spent the money that I should have paid to taxes, because it was all 100% commission, right? So I'm working at Street Context, and I'm working, you know, as an SDR, and I get a call, CRA, you know, Canada Revenue Agency over here. I get a call from them. They come to my house. That was my business address, like, when I was doing door to door. And they give me a bill for $110,000. Okay, like, so I owe $110K, and I'm an SDR making like $40K at that time, plus a little bit of commission or whatever. So after working at Street Cons for a little bit, I said, okay, like, I got to go back to HVAC. I got to go back to door to door. So then I actually left the tech world. I went back there, started making like the kind of money I was making before again, started paying off, you know, my debt to the government. And then eventually, like, working through, like, another, I would say, year and a half, 2 years of doing HVAC sales, then I was in a position where I came back and then started working for a company called Renoron, which is a construction technology company. And over there, then I was an AE. So it was kind of like crazy. It was like, you know, door to door, get into tech sales, learn this digital stuff. Oh shit, gotta get back into the grind, door to door again, and then come back in. And then from there, I was like, all right, I'm in a much better place now. I can actually focus on, you know, building a future.
Wow, what a wild ride.
Yeah, man. Yeah, it's nuts.
Do you ever just knock on doors occasionally for fun?
Honestly, sometimes I just think, like, oh man, it'd be fun, you know, just to get another day out there on the field. Just get out there. It's like, I wish, like, that was a service that we could offer as a company. We do, like, you know, LinkedIn, cold calling, email, door to door. Oh man, I'd out there, it'd be a lot of fun.
Just to see if you still got it, right?
Oh yeah, exactly, man. Especially now, like, I think COVID definitely probably did a big reset on door to door, because nobody knocked doors for a year, right? So these homeowners, they're not annoyed anymore of all these different people coming to their door and selling different kind of stuff. I think there's a big reset for door to door probably right now.
Yeah, I was actually thinking about that when you were talking about it. I was like, man, if you did door to door during COVID, that's a tough gig. You know, people would be offended if you knocked on their door. Like, I mean, they already are in most cases, but they would really be pissed off. But now, or it could be the other side, right? Like, they're not seeing anybody. They're super pumped to answer the door because somebody's coming to visit.
Exactly.
I mean, they might invite you in for coffee or something.
Right. Yeah, no, for sure, man. Yeah, because it got to a point where it's also so saturated. Like, everyone's selling something door. There's like driveway ceiling companies, you know, cable and phone companies going door to door, energy companies, gas, like, everything is door to door, right? And yeah, some homeowners will be pissed.
Yeah. All right, so tell me, let's deliver on our promise here. Yeah. We talked about, you know, we said we're going to talk about some of the common top of funnel mistakes that you see companies making, and then let's kind of talk through like what you see that's really working right now, you know, on these different channels like LinkedIn, email, and phone.
Yeah, for sure. So I think that, you know, working with so many different SaaS and technology companies, one of the biggest kind of mistakes or, you know, trends that we see is that a lot of founders will build their product, then try to find a buyer. Right. versus like finding the buyer first and then building a product for them, right? Yeah. Which is how it should be. But most people just build a product and then hope to find a buyer after. So a lot of the work that we end up doing is really helping them find who their right buyer is. We're doing a lot of customer discovery for our clients. These are early stage startups. And so, you know, that would be one of the biggest mistakes is like just not understanding like who your buyer is, what. And then so a lot of the work that we do is really involved in building a customer profile and like buyer personas to understand, okay, well, you're saying that this is who you think your buyer should be. We think that these two other personas are also, you know, a really good target for you. And we're going to dive deep. We're going to learn, okay, you know, what keeps them up at night? What are their biggest pain points? What are, how does your product actually provide them with an emotional value, right? Like, we all know feature selling doesn't work. You can have all the features in the world, all the bells and whistles, whatever. It doesn't matter. Like, what is it actually doing for them? And what emotional value is it delivering? So that, I think, like, if whether you're a salesperson or a startup founder, you know, starting sales, is spend a lot of time really learning about your buyers. And, yeah, focus on that quite a bit.
Yeah, so even before your product's fully flushed out is what you're saying. Yeah, and I see more companies getting on board with this because I think that this people have been beating on this drum for a little while now where people are starting to realize like, oh, you know, maybe my idea is not the greatest thing ever. And, you know, maybe there's a lot of things that I haven't considered. And so I see a lot of people more like, you know, beta rolling stuff out, you know, getting some early adopters, collecting feedback, you know, really slowing things down before, you know, they're really getting after it. Because I think enough people have been burned of like, you know, building, you know, something that nobody really gives a crap about.
Exactly. Exactly.
And your product doesn't even need to be the best to sell it. It needs to be good enough. Right? Because if you have the greatest product, but you don't know how to sell it, or you're not targeting the right people, then you're not going to stick around very long, even if your product is great.
Yeah, exactly. And you have to know, like, who are you building it for? Like, who is your product built for? Right? Like, well, who do you have in mind when you're building your product? And then when you're building it, well, how well do you understand that person? So for example, our services, right? Like, we know our bread and butter, our target, our niche is B2B SaaS founders that are, you know, mid early stage. We understand them. We know their pain points. Yeah. We know what they're doing, you know, what their problems are, what their goals are and things like that. And so when in our sales presentation, like our sales team, they'll drop in keywords that will resonate with them. They'll ask questions that we know are relevant to them at the stage that they're at. And, you know, there's a million lead generation companies out there, you know, like that's not like it's that's what it is. What there's so many lead generation companies.
Yeah.
And, you know, one of the ways that we've been able to differentiate ourselves is really framing our services in a way that resonates with these startup founders. You know, our packages are not, we used to call our packages like basic, all inclusive VIP. But then we did a lot of work. And like now our packages are called go to market packages. Right? Because they're going to market. That's what they're doing.
Yeah. We're the language and the messaging you use matters so much.
So much, because they're going to market. We don't talk about lead generation. We talk about customer discovery, right? We help you do customer discovery and get your first few customers that you're looking to get, right? Like, so things like that is when I say that to a founder, they're like, oh, like, yes, like these 10 other companies are helping me with leads. You're helping with customer discovery, which is the stage that I'm at. So
Yeah. Now, you know, I get, you know, being specific and sort of niching down, right? And then speaking the language of the people within that niche or that, you know, subset of people that need, you know, that this is going to resonate with. Now, I think a lot of people are a lot of times scared to go that route because then they think it's going to scare off other potential people that maybe doesn't resonate with. So what are your thoughts on that?
I think that, like, I don't think you can have a product and service that's for like everyone in the world, right? Like that just doesn't work. So I think to a certain extent, you do need to know who you're building for, who your buyers are, like, well, where's the best fit, right? And it's okay to not have a good fit, right? If I'm on a meeting with a prospect and it's not a good fit, I'm just going to be honest. I say, hey, like, we could probably do this. It's probably going to be a 2-3 month thing and we'll try it out, you know? And we'll have a couple ideas of what we can do, but it's not our ideal fit, you know, because you're not a right. you're not a technology company. Let's say you're like a consulting company selling something else. Like, well, try it. Like, we had a client that was a design agency, for example. That's not our bread and butter. He knew that. We were honest about it. He tried it out, and it actually didn't work. And I, you know, and then that's all right. But you should know where your value is, and then focus on selling that.
Yeah, yeah. But even there's even value in what you just described there, right? Is because we talked a lot about like figuring out who your niche is, you know, who you serve best, whose problems you can solve. But mm-hmm. like sometimes finding out who you're not a good fit for, who mm-hmm. you don't best serve, there's a ton of value in that as well, right? Yep. Because nobody wants deals that are going to churn or exactly. aren't going to stick around, or you're not going to be able to deliver for, because that ruins your reputation. Exactly. They typically take up a lot of time. It's hard yeah. to scale and be efficient, right? Yeah. So you know now, you now know, hey, design agencies, they're not our, they're, those are not our jam. Like, so yeah. we don't have to waste time in, you know, trying to pitch and sell and figure out and churn and all of those things. And you can be more focused on the people that you can serve and do the best job for.
100%. And we learned that too, right? At the beginning, obviously, when you're a new company, you're taking whatever comes your way. You're grabbing onto everything and you're trying. Yeah. But it's true. You get churn. You don't get good reviews. You don't get references from those. You wasted a lot of time. There's a lot of headaches, you know, a lot of pressure from clients. And it's just not a good thing. Versus when you know what works and you stay within that, you get those referrals, you get good case studies you can share that are relevant, close more deals, you know, things like that.
Yeah. 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 And, you know, it's hard for sellers or founders that sell, you know, to be disciplined enough to like turn away business. Yeah. If you kind of know it's not a good fit. But if you do, you know, want to try something, just like you mentioned, right? Like, be super honest and authentic and transparent about it. Like, hey, we typically don't serve people like you. I think we can maybe work it out, you know, and we can give it a try, because yeah. then at least they don't feel totally burned if exactly. it doesn't work out. Like, if they're willing to go on that journey with you, knowing yeah. that it's a bit of an experiment, then at least you can end it, you know, on good terms. Because I like to tell everybody that I work with, like, hey, the goal is to deliver a good experience yeah. regardless of the result. And, yeah. you know, sales hustlers are probably like, geez, you're saying that again because they heard me say it a million times. Mm-hmm. But it's just so true. And I love, you know, reminding people of that, because whether you do business together, whether you don't do business, or you do business and stop doing business, like, you need to deliver yeah. a good experience.
Exactly. And a lot of that delivering a good experience comes down to managing expectations. And that's all you're really doing at that point, right? You, by being honest, you're managing expectations. You're not selling, you know, the dream and then delivering nothing.
Yeah. Yeah. So, all right. So you guys are working a lot with, you know, companies that are trying to, you know, find their product market fit in an yep. early stage. You know, you mentioned you guys are using LinkedIn, email, phone. What are some things that you see, you know, that are working or not working across yeah. those channels?
For sure. So, first things first, you're reaching out to a certain set of people on LinkedIn, right? So again, going back to that customer persona, buyer persona, we spend a lot of time researching and understanding who we're reaching out to. So that's number one. Number two, that translates into all that research translates into our messaging sequence and when we reach out to them. And, you know, if you're on LinkedIn, like, don't be one of those people that are sending essays, that are sending like those big, big messages. You know, you can just, no one's reading them, right? And it's just, yeah. and it's really interesting how LinkedIn and email, they're both like text, they're both digital, whatever, but they actually have very different approaches that work. People are on LinkedIn to network, and you have a little chat thing. It's almost like, you know, you're texting, it's on your phone, yeah. right? And so you have to yeah. almost treat it as if you typed out your message on your phone and you sent it, right? And keep it casual, keep it just a lot less formal, a lot less wordy, but get to the point, right? And some of the things that are working for us, and this actually ends up changing every 3-4 months, we're always experimenting. Something that works for a little while, everyone else adopts it too, and then it stops working, and then we got to come up with something else. But what's working now is, like, just, you know, we'll just say, like, hey John, you know, we're working on something that I think might be relevant to you, or we're working on something that I think might be interesting to you given your background. We're building a platform that provides X benefit by doing, you know, XYZ. Wanted to run it by you, get your thoughts. would you be opposed to a conversation? And that's actually like, I'm going to give that away. Like, would you be opposed to a conversation is a killer CTA that's working for us. It's like Chris Voss, right? Getting the no, getting people to agree with you by saying no. So instead of saying, would you be open to a conversation? Would you be opposed? It's working pretty well. And anyway, so that kind of a format, or just asking for like feedback, asking for thoughts. No one wants to book a call. No one wants to book a meeting. No one wants the Calendly link shoved in their face. Like, just be very like colleague to colleague type of approach. And, you know, that's what's working on LinkedIn.
Yeah. Yeah. I love so many things about that. I love that you mentioned, you know, is a DM, you think of a DM like a text message, right? And, you know, you use the language like you're texting a friend. Now, maybe there's some things that you would text to a friend that you're not going to put in a LinkedIn DM, but, you know, and using language where like, hey, we're equals, right? Because a lot of times people get really caught up in like, you know, being very submissive in their messaging of like, you know, there's some sort of hierarchy thing there. And it's like, no, we're peers. Like, hey, you know, I'm just wanting to get your opinion on this, get your thoughts. I love the, you know, going for the no there with, you know, are you opposed to, or, you know, I love one that Jason Bay likes to use a lot, which is, hey, would it be a terrible idea? Yeah, like you're making an assumption that it's a no, and, you know, helping them sort of feel like, oh, I got the power, the control here. And so there's a lot of, you know, psychological things there in the type of messaging that you're talking about to drive results. And yeah, man, nobody wants a link shoved down their throat. Like, you know, when you see four paragraphs in a link, like people don't even read that shit. They delete it. Yeah. They block you. They're pissed off that they even accepted your connection request.
Yeah, exactly. And, you know, a lot of times when we do onboard a new client, they always ask us like, hey, like what kind of marketing collateral do you need? What links do you need? What kind of this is? Like, honestly, we don't put links in our messaging sequence. Like this is LinkedIn. Yeah. Nobody wants that. It's just a conversation. That's all it is. They connected with you. You're both professionals. Just have a conversation.
Yeah. Yeah. And I mean, calendar links actually piss some people off.
Yeah.
There's some people like people have just overused the calendar link thing that some people even just don't even like links. Like, you know, better call to action is, you know, any thoughts? What do you think? Are you opposed to? Would it be a terrible idea? Those are all great examples of, you know, where you're just looking for people to raise their hand.
That's
right.
It.
Like, I mean, come on. How many people have you, I mean, if you're sending links out there, like, please, is that shit working? Like it can't be working. Like nobody's clicking on that. It's like, hey, this looks so interesting. I'm going to take time out of my day, find a time. Like I'm super pumped. And if they do, they typically, you might book some meetings, but I'd love to see what your show rate is.
Yeah. Yeah. I doubt there's even meetings being booked, honestly, from that. Even when someone expresses interest in a meeting, like, hey, yeah, sure, let's chat, let's meet, whatever. Even then, we don't send a calendar link. Like, it's our best practice to just suggest two or three time slots. You want to create as a little friction on the prospect's end as possible to get on a call with you. But if you send them a calendar link, even then, it's like now they have to open up the calendar link, look at their calendar, match up times, and do all your work for you, you know? And just a couple of times they'll pick one, send them an invite.
Yeah. And same with email. Like email's gotta be shorter too. Same sort of messaging there. You know, you could put a little more context into email, but still same practices.
Yeah, with email, it's really good. So we use like a multi-channel sequence, right? So we'll pair whoever we're reaching out to on LinkedIn, we're reaching out to them on email as well. And, you know, we'll use simple subject lines like introduction, question mark. You know, quick question has been like a timeless one. It always works for like 5-10 years now, I swear.
Yeah.
But question mark is a really good one. And it just starts off with like, hey, John, tried to connect on LinkedIn. Boom, you have context, right? They're going to open that email. And then the first line, just make it something that's relevant to them, like a pain point that's relevant. Like, hey, man, like, I know it's tough to, you know, meet KPIs when you can't do this, or I know it's tough to do whatever, right? That's why, like, we're developing pretty much your solution. And then once you run by, you get your thoughts, would you be opposed to a conversation? Same thing. So on email, I think it definitely works to have that pain point solution CTA. That definitely works. It doesn't work on LinkedIn too much, but on email, that works really well. Yeah.
Yeah. And
have it paired with the LinkedIn outreach, obviously, as well. So, yeah.
Yep. And then with the LinkedIn and the email touch, I mean, you're laying in the phone. Are you still seeing most meetings booked over the phone when using those other channels? Or where are you seeing the most, you know, conversion to meeting?
So across the board, where the best conversions are on LinkedIn. Like, that's just the channel of, you know, today, this generation, whatever. It's the best channel to book meetings. And then after that, like, email, it works for some clients. It doesn't work too well for others, right? When we're working with clients that are selling engineering software and we're reaching out to IT, engineering, those kinds of people, we don't really get much results on email. We're reaching out to VPs of customer success, getting tons of meetings, right? So there seems to be something with these personas and where they're more active and things like that. On the, you know, on cold calling, it's similar. Cold calling will work for some personas. It won't work for others, right? And all three, and we tell this to our clients during our sales meetings too, is like, if they want to go for that full package, sometimes cold calling isn't a fit. Like, cold calling, again, IT, engineering, those kinds of people, not the easiest. Cold calling CISOs, like, you know, information security executives, not the easiest. But we're calling HR and VP of people, VP of culture. We're doing that for one of our clients. And that's actually performing better than LinkedIn and email. Because those guys, we get on a phone, we're able to talk to them, get, you know, have a conversation, and it's converting. So although LinkedIn is overall the best, it also depends on the persona.
Absolutely. Thank you so much for coming on, man. Really appreciate it. Love this topic. Love learning a little bit more about you. Just let all the sales hustlers know where they can learn more about you, what you're doing, where they can follow you, or any final thoughts.
Yeah, for sure. I mean, fiveringsmarketing.com, that's our website. You know, that's for our agency. But you can find me on LinkedIn, Shaheem Alam on LinkedIn, Five Rings Marketing on LinkedIn as well. Feel free to shoot me a message or connect. I'll definitely accept. Just don't send me essays. That's it.
or a link. yeah. All right, awesome. If you enjoyed today's episode, please write us a review, share the show with your friends, and as always, we're listening for your feedback.
Thank you for tuning in to this episode of Sales Hustle. Are you a sales professional looking to take your sales career to the next level? If the answer is yes, then I want you to go over to salescast.co. Check us out, and if you feel that you are ready, set up a time to talk with me and my co-founder, Chris. I'm your host, Colin Mitchell, and if you enjoyed this episode, feel free to leave us a review and share the podcast with your friends.